All right, so we're also going to talk a little bit about reducing the reliance on government programs, some of the tax advantages and the tax deductibility that we encountered today, which are actually really good. So the Deficit Reduction Act, great piece of legislation that was signed back in 2006, went into effect in 2010. And what the Deficit Reduction Act really did for us from a long-term care standpoint is it allows consumers today to use annuities to pay for long-term care. For if it's a non-qualified annuity, they can 1035 it into a tax-qualified for long-term care annuity. And when the dollars come out of that annuity, they come out tax-free. So think about all the clients that you have. Better off without it. They want it for recording, so I have to have it on. Yeah, I know I project plenty loud enough. I don't think I need the mic. One of the things with the Deficit Reduction Act is that being able to take money out tax-free. Think about all the tens of thousands, millions of consumers today that have annuities that never plan on annuitizing those policies and will die with those annuities in place, but may need long-term care. Wouldn't it be great if they could use one of those or some of those annuities and put them into a tax-qualified annuity, and now they have a way to be able to pull money out of those annuities, income tax-free, for the purposes of long-term care? That's a huge benefit that went into effect in 2010. Most people don't know about it. So a great way to be able to use non-qualified annuities. There's also some changes to home equity exemption and then also the change in Medicaid eligibility for long-term care. The change in Medicaid eligibility for long-term care will continue to change. When I started in long-term care, there was the 30-month look-back. Now it's a 60-month look-back. There are even some states that are looking at how they can have the family members pay for long-term care. If the parents don't have the ability to pay for their own care, they're looking at going after the children. State of Indiana, when you qualify for the government's Medicaid program, if you're single and you're deemed to need care for greater than 6 months and will never come out of receiving care, they'll force you to sell your home while you're alive. So the government's getting more and more aggressive in going after these dollars because it's bankrupting most states with the Medicaid system. So they have to do something to get the money back. So we've got the 5-year look back. It's 5 years right now. You know, a lot of clients say, well, I'm not worried about the 5-year look back. I've talked to an attorney. And the attorney told me we can just shift my assets and move the assets and I can qualify for the government's Medicaid program. Well, there's some things they don't talk about that are really a problem with the Medicaid program. First of all, you don't get to pick and choose the nursing home you're going to go to. You go to the nearest available nursing home bed in your community. That might be 10 miles away. It might be 50 or 100 miles away. And the other piece of it is you're going to a nursing home. You don't get to stay at home when you go on the government's welfare program. Most attorneys, when they talk about Medicaid planning, don't tell you that you have to go into a nursing home. Don't tell you that you don't get to pick the nursing home. They don't tell you that you're going to have 2, 3, 4, 5 roommates in a room. You're not going to have a private room looking out onto the garden. You're going to have kind of the not-so-desirable room, and you're going to have a bunch of roommates. So there's some problems with Medicaid planning. It's not the best way to go. But many clients don't understand that, and that's not explained to them when they're working with some of the attorneys out there about Medicaid planning. So another thing to be worried about with Medicaid planning. So the DRA tightness, the restrictions on asset transfer as well, that's going to continue to tighten up as they're looking to solve this issue that we have with people trying to qualify Medicaid and other services that just are bankrupting the country.
Yes, sir.
Deficit Reduction Act. So it could also be second party or second penalty period may be assessed. So depending on how you transferred the assets, when you transferred the assets, the bottom line is you don't want to put your client in a position where they're transferring assets and going on the government's welfare program. You need to be talking to them now about putting a plan in place so they don't have to worry about long-term care. Just a little side note. Who can tell me, what do you think the single busiest day of new claims filed is for long-term care? That's right. There's a reason for that. Why is it the Monday after Thanksgiving? Exactly. It's all about family. Talking to a client about long-term care planning is no different than having a conversation with a client about life insurance. Nobody buys life insurance on themselves for themselves. They buy it on themselves for their family. Same thing holds true with long-term care. It's all about the family. Why do we see this huge spike in claims the day after Thanksgiving, the Monday following Thanksgiving? It's because family's there. And that's when you see, holy cow, we didn't realize grandma's kind of a wreck. She's not bathing because she's having a hard time getting in and out of the bathtub. She's not cooking and cleaning for herself. And she's not doing the things that she needs to be doing. So the claims department gets a phone call first thing Monday morning. When do you think the second busiest day of new claims filed is in the long-term care industry? And I'll tell you, it's not the day after the day after Christmas. What other big time? Think about it. Big family time. Everyone says Mother's Day. That's the most common response. You're close. It's actually the Monday President's Day. I like that. It's the Monday following Easter Sunday. Once again, it's another big family time. Family all gets together. And that's when they say, Grandma's got a problem. Mom's got a problem. And they initiate a claim. So something to be thinking about. Thanksgiving's just around the corner, believe it or not. Now's the perfect time to be talking to your clients about long-term care planning. Because it is that time of year coming right up. So if we look at back to the Deficit Reduction Act, places a limit on the home equity of $500,000. Utah is $560,000. They're going after the homes. So really when you think about Medicaid, so people say, well, I'll just go on the government's Medicaid program once we've spent down to that poverty level. What they don't realize is even though that you can protect that home, you can protect that home while you're living. But the government will put a lien on the property. And when you die, assuming you're single, they're going to go after that home. If you're married, they're not going to kick your spouse out of the home, but they're still going to have a lien on that property. So when your spouse passes away, they're going after that home. So really, the bottom line is, Medicaid, if you have a home and it's worth enough to cover the cost of the long-term care expenses, really all you got was an interest-free loan on your long-term care expenses until you passed away or until your spouse passes away. So it's just not the best way to go for planning purposes. Right. You can't go out and buy a $2 million home to try and protect all of those dollars from the government. That's what the home exemption is trying to protect against keeping. Right. Say that one more time. Correct. Now they can go. In most states, they can go after the whole thing, and they will go after the whole thing. Yeah. Absolutely. And they will do it. And different states are more aggressive than others. Like I said, Indiana, 6 months after you're receiving care, if it's deemed you're never coming out, they're forcing you to sell the house while you're alive, assuming you're single. Yes, sir. I'm not sure the answer on that one. But in that case, what I do, you might not be able to qualify for Medicaid because you might have enough income, or they're going to be taking the income from that home and apply, so I do know that, they are going to be taking that income that you have and applying it toward the cost of your long-term care. They're going to look at that as income. So reverse mortgage isn't going to protect you either. Yeah. But then they're going to look at the assets that you have, depending on how you spent the money. You know, if depending on what you've spent the money on, they could force you to sell some of the assets. There's really five things that the government won't take from you while you're alive. They won't take a wedding ring from you, so that's the piece of jewelry you can keep. They'll let you keep a car, as long as it's not an exotic car. So there's some limitations in most states on the car. You can keep your home. You can keep a musical instrument. And interestingly, they don't define what that musical instrument is, the value. So it can be anything from a $2.99 harmonica you bought at CVS to a $25,000 baby grand piano. So there are a few things that they will allow you to keep, but not a lot. Right. Then you can keep. Then there's income you can keep, and there's dollars you can keep. In most states, for a couple, it's around $100,000 for the spouse living at home, and then there's some income, and it depends on the state what the income amount is that you're allowed to keep to qualify for Medicaid. Yeah, I think that probably the best one, and I've said it a couple times, is the Indiana thing. You know, 6 months after you've been deemed that you're not going to recover and you're going to be in that nursing home for the rest of your life, forcing you to sell the home. The state of Pennsylvania with the FILA Act, where they're actually going after family members. So if my mom or dad needed long-term care and I was on Medicaid, they're going to look to me and my siblings to reimburse the state or pay for their care. So that's where the states are getting more and more aggressive. If we look at the look back rule, you know, the look back rule went from 30 months to 60 months. And all it takes is one or two states making a change like that, and they all tend to follow over time. So the FILA law is something that's concerning. You know, is that going to happen nationwide? Who knows? But hey, one state's already doing it, others could follow. Indiana with selling home. You know, those are the things you have to be concerned about. All it takes is one state to do something, and all the other states start to look and say, hey, that's a good idea. That could help us out financially. California, well, we're nutty in California. Yeah, in California, we're not setting the trend from a Medicaid or Medi-Cal reimbursement standpoint. Where we really set the trend is on what our policies, what long-term care policies must pay for. Probably the biggest thing that's different in California than any other state is on home health care, we're required to pay for informal care providers. So if you want to hire the next door neighbor to come in and do things such as, you know, light housekeeping, maybe you need some meal preparation, things that you really don't need to go to necessarily a home health care agency to hire somebody to perform, that you can just hire your next door neighbor to do, our policies in California will reimburse for those services. You won't find that anywhere else in the country. So, sure. Outside of California? So outside of California, our policy follows what everyone else's policies do. We pay for services provided by licensed professionals or through a home health care agency. Possible? I couldn't tell you. Here's what I'll tell you about family members. So even in California, the law does not require to pay for family members. There's a downside to paying for family members. People think that family members are a great way to get your long-term care paid for or taken care of. It's actually not. most family members, as much as we love our family and we want to do the right thing, we just can't provide the same level of care, quite frankly, as a stranger could, or maybe even somebody we know can provide because of the relationship we have with that family member. The other reason that you don't see, you know, if you go back 10 years ago, more and more policies 10 years ago that were being sold did pay for family members. You don't see policies written today paying for family members. Because the other reason that we don't pay for family members as an industry overall is fraud. There's quite a bit of fraud for home health care. You're my brother, and I say, hey, you know what, why don't I'll submit this claim, and I'm going to put down that you're coming in and providing 8 hours of care for me. You just come by and, you know, cook some meals for me, and we'll split the money 50-50. Hey, sounds like a pretty good deal. And that's what happens. So there is quite a bit of fraud in traditional long-term care. With our products at State Life One America, we don't see the same level of fraud because we're using either a life insurance product or an annuity. So it is your money that you're utilizing first. It's your death benefit or it's your annuity value. So we don't see fraud. But overall, in the world of long-term care, we do see fraud when people want to use family members. So we've kind of stayed away from that. So what are the three potential threats? Market turndown, obviously, if we look at what happened in 2008, 2009. You know, in from a long-term care standpoint, as an industry, we actually see a boom in sales with market turndown. Why? Because people that thought they could self-fund a long-term care event that all of a sudden lose 10, 25, 50% of their net worth are saying, I don't know if I can self-fund any longer, and they do look to insurance as a solution when there's a market turndown. So it's not a terrible thing from a business standpoint from our side of it, but not a good thing for clients. Income taxes, as taxes increase, that can be a problem for many people. And then end-of-life care expenses. Those are all things that can really be an impact to somebody's well-being when they have a potential need for long-term care and how it can affect them. So longevity, so we're seeing people living longer. You know, one of the things that there was a story on 60 Minutes about 3 months ago, and it was talking about the epidemic of Alzheimer's disease. And I question, is there really, and it's something I've been saying for a long time, and 60 Minutes finally proved that I was right, something I've been saying, there's no epidemic of Alzheimer's disease. The epidemic is people are living longer. And because they're living longer, Alzheimer's disease is just rearing its ugly head. People, think about, I want you to all think about, if there was somebody in your family, I'm not going to ask you to tell me about them, but think about you had that cousin crazy, that crazy cousin Uncle Bill, or that nutty Aunt Mabel that you heard stories about. And I question, were they really crazy? Were they really nutty? Or 30 or 40, 50 years ago, did they maybe have Alzheimer's disease, but it wasn't a recognized illness back then? We didn't have a way to really diagnose this, and we still can't diagnose Alzheimer's with 100% certainty without an autopsy. But the reason we see so much Alzheimer's today is because people are living longer. My own father, 86 years old, finally starting to see it with him. He's got the early stages of dementia. You know, he's not that bad. He's at the very earliest of stages, but he was just diagnosed recently that, yeah, he's got early onset dementia. So it does happen, but it's because he's old. He's 86 years old. He's lived longer than most people will live. If he had died at 80 years old, it would have never happened. We wouldn't have never seen it. So because of life expectancy, we're starting to see it. 70% of all individuals over age 65 will need some long-term care at some point in their lifetime. If you take it to a couple, that number grows to 91% that one of the two people in a couple will need some long-term care at some point in their lifetime. So as we're living longer, the chances of us needing long-term care is only increasing, and it's not going away. When we look at how long people use long-term care, so these are averages, and averages are, you know, take them for what they're worth, because if I was to tell you that I'm standing in a bucket of ice, but my hair is on fire, so on average, I'm just about right. Right? So averages, take them for what they're worth. But we know that for men, they'll use long-term care for about 2.25 years. Ladies, about 3.7 years. Alzheimer's patients, about 8 years. But then there's my friend Grant and Kathy. Kathy was diagnosed in her early 40s with MS. Within less than 3 months of her diagnosis of MS, she was in a wheelchair. She's now been on claim for 19 years. So when you talk about averages, clearly she blew that average away of 3.7 years. So as we live longer, it could happen for a long period of time. We just don't know how long it's going to happen to anyone. So that could really impact your finances. Think about 19 years. That's a long time. Luckily, they have lifetime long-term care protection. They get a check every month. Their lifestyle really didn't change too terribly much because they have enough money to pay for the care she needs, and they made the modifications to the house that they needed to make. All the things that went in line with long-term care. So most people, they have multiple concerns. Wealth transfer, asset growth, retirement income that will not run out, and long-term care and health care expenses. You know, the retirement income that will not run out, I'm amazed at how many people I've talked to over the years that are working with a financial planner, and they say to their financial planner, I'm concerned about running out of money because I think I might live to 90, 95. What if I live to 100 years old? You need to make sure that my money never runs out. Pretty reasonable request, right? I'm sure that's all happened to you. You've had somebody concerned about their money running out. And then you switch the conversation to long-term care planning. Oh, I'm going to die at 60 years old. But they just told you they were going to live to 90, 95, or 100. But when it's long-term care, no, I'm just going to drop dead at 60 or 65 years old. It's not going to happen to me. Unfortunately, that is a real concern that people are aware of today, that they could need some long-term care, and the cost could be quite expensive if they need long-term care for an extended period of time. So back to the 70% of people over age 65 will need some long-term care. When we look at the cost of long-term care, and I'll tell you, one of the tools, if you've never used it before, is the Genworth Cost of Care Survey. It's a great tool to look at what the costs are of long-term care, because one of the things that I've learned for my 30-plus years in the long-term care industry is I've never met a client that really knew what the cost of long-term care was in their own backyard. They're always, my experience has been, 20 to 30% on the low side. So Genworth Cost of Care Survey, great tool to be able to look at by state, by specific cities, the larger cities around the country. They'll have the cost of long-term care. In the state of Utah, my guess is they probably have, you know, Salt Lake City. They might have Provo as two different locations with the cost. They probably have they have a state medium for the cost. They probably have, you know, kind of northern Utah versus southern Utah broken out in cost. So it's a great tool to really look at what are the costs in the area. The other two questions you really need to be asking as you're helping a client understand the cost of long-term care is, where do they see themselves actually utilizing their care? You know, if they're a snowbird and they spend a few months of the year down in Arizona or maybe San Diego, you better make sure that when you talk to them about a plan for long-term care, that not only are you looking at what the costs are here in the greater Salt Lake area, Provo area, but where is the cost where they're going to spend the other few months of the year? Because if something happens to them when they're in San Diego, where the costs are probably a little bit more expensive, you want to make sure they're prepared for that cost as well. And then here's another component that most people don't think about that we should also ask the client when we're planning for long-term care, is what kind of discretionary income do you have? If your client has some discretionary income, they might want to use some of those extra dollars to offset the cost of long-term care. You know, I see far too often people are building these long-term care plans and they pay 100% of the cost. Now, for some people, that's great. But for some people, that might be more premium than they're willing to spend, knowing that they have some discretionary income. Or they might just say, no, this isn't for me. Well, could it have been for them if you could have reduced the premium by 10%? And if they had enough discretionary income to pay that cost difference out of their own pocket, you could have put a really nice plan in place rather than just blowing them out with a cost that is just not affordable from a premium standpoint. So keep those two things in mind as you're looking at the cost of long-term care and how you can help your clients with that cost. So if we look at just homemaker services, I mean, $65 per day for services for adult daycare center. Adult daycare centers are great. They're just like child daycare center. The biggest difference, size of the furniture. But they do all the same things. When you have a parent living with you, you're on your way to work, you drop them off at the adult daycare center. It's a great way for somebody to receive care in their community and not have to worry about leaving them home alone, especially an Alzheimer's patient that might leave the stove on all day or do some of those types of things. You don't have to worry about it. So think about some of those other costs that we see out there. Homemaker at about $20 an hour, that's a national average. Where I live, I can guarantee you the cost of homemaker services is probably more like $30 to $40 an hour. So much more expensive. There's going to be parts of the country where it could be lower. But the cost of long-term care is going up, and it will continue to go up. So if we look at some national averages here, and I think you're going to find right in Salt Lake and the greater Salt Lake communities around the area, you're going to find you're just a little bit above the national average. Somebody was asking me yesterday, you know, where do you find the cheapest long-term care? Well, the cheapest long-term care you're going to find is down in Alabama, Mississippi. The most expensive place for long-term care, state of Alaska. About $800 a day in a nursing home today. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Just the supply and demand. And everything in Alaska is expensive. I mean, you look at the cost for everything is more expensive in Alaska than anywhere else in the country. Hawaii's another expensive state. California, Oregon, Washington, Connecticut, New Jersey, Massachusetts, those are the more expensive states. Here in Utah, you're going to find you're going to be a little closer to that national average, but still a very expensive proposition. Yep. Sure. Yeah, so there's stages. Do you know where your mom is at in the kind of the progression of the disease? Okay. So she's pretty advanced then. Okay, because there's 12 stages within Alzheimer's, 12 levels of severity, so the stages as you progress. I know a gentleman down in the Fresno area that I used to work with that sells product, and his mother had Alzheimer's, and in they were keeping her at home. And what they found, and this is not uncommon with Alzheimer's patients, they'll go, in the middle of the night, they'll get up and they'll go for a walk. I get Nixle alerts from our sheriff's department. I probably get one a week in Sonoma County where I live for a missing elderly adult who's gone off walking in the middle of the night or even in the middle of the day. And so what he had to do to keep his mother safe at home, he installed a burglar alarm. And it wasn't to keep people out. It was to let him know in the middle of the night when he was asleep, if the alarm went off, that meant his mom was on the loose, and he had to go down the driveway to catch her before she got to the street. And that was just one of the ways that he was able to help keep her at home safely, was he put in an alarm system to know when she would get up in the middle of the night and take off. That's not uncommon to hear about people, you know, walking off during the day or at night. So Alzheimer's patients, there's also specific facilities that will take care of Alzheimer's patients. And at $3,000 a month for an assisted living facility for somebody with Alzheimer's, that's actually very reasonable, extremely reasonable. Usually Alzheimer's patients cost even more because there is more care that's needed just to watch over them, a lot more supervision. So that's nice to hear. Hopefully it's a nice facility and she's comfortable there. Yeah, see, that's wonderful. Because that's not, I don't want to say that's not the norm, but it's not. And especially from a cost standpoint, that's very reasonable. That's great. That's good to know. So it can get expensive, as you can see, for the different levels of care, and it can wipe people out virtually overnight. So, you know, somebody that says, well, I can pay for long-term care myself, and you take $1 million that they have, and you can see how quickly you can use up those dollars. And these are national numbers at $72,000 a year. Where I live, for 24-hour-a-day home care, you're looking at about anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000 a month. My aunt passed away a couple years ago, 4 days short of 101 years old. She had 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week home care. It was $12,000 a month in the Bay Area. So about $150,000 a year. And she was receiving care for 6 years. So do the math. You know how much money she spent over that time. It was a considerable amount of money that she spent for long-term care. Who pays for the hidden costs? I've heard it said someone will pay the price that must be paid. Who pays that hidden cost? So if we look at where the cost is and who's paying for it, 75% of caregiving support in the U.S. is provided by a family member. It tears families apart. You know, one of the things that I do when I introduce myself to strangers at a social event, and this is a great line, and you always know if the person's friendly or not based on the response I get, is I'll ask, when somebody asks me what I do for a living, I tell them that I ensure at your parents' funeral, you and your siblings will still be speaking to one another. That's true. There are so many families that I've talked to over the years where the kids aren't speaking to one another anymore, because generally speaking, one of the siblings will either pay for all the cost of care if the parents don't have the means to do so, or one sibling will provide all the care. And then at the funeral, that one sibling that either paid for or provided all the care is not speaking to the other rotten you-know-what siblings that they have, because they didn't do anything. And then the fight happens of, now it's time to sell mom or dad's house. And there's three siblings, and it's supposed to be a third, a third, a third. Well, the sibling that was providing all the care for the last 2 years is saying, wait a second, I need a little payback for what I just did for the 2 years. But that's not what the trust says or the will says. It says we're splitting it a third, a third, a third. So it does nothing but create problems for family. So it's unfortunate that 75% of the caregiving is being performed by the family, because it does tear families apart. 66% of all unpaid caregivers are women. Ladies, this is a women's issue, long-term care. So it's something that we all need to talk about, but ladies even more so need to have a conversation about long-term care planning, because it is a ladies' issue. Unpaid caregivers give up nearly $660,000 of income over their lifetime. It's a considerable amount of money. So this is a very expensive proposition, and in most cases, to ladies. If we look at 33% of working women reduce their work hours, 29 pass up promotion because they're taking care of a family member, 20% switch from full to part-time jobs, 16% quit their jobs, and 13% retire early. Think about all of you. How many of you could retire early to take care of a family member? How would that change your lifestyle? But those are some of the financial impacts that you could be dealing with. Loved ones, especially women, ask the women, because they are concerned. Help them check long-term care off their list of concerns. So self-funding. You know, so many people believe they can self-fund a long-term care event, until they find out the reality of what that long-term care event costs and how quickly they can be devastated. There's a couple different kinds of ways we can solve this. You can look at health-based long-term care insurance, which Unfortunately, we're seeing a decline in health-based long-term care insurance. Over the last 10 years, we've seen that market drop about 10% each year. Why? Well, there's a few reasons. One, we've seen an incredible amount of rate increases on in-force policies. We've seen the cost of traditional long-term care insurance go through the roof for new policies. A lot of people are concerned about, look at all that premium I'm going to spend for the next 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years, and if I never use it, what do I get from the policy? Nothing at all. What if I cancel my policy in 10 years? What do I get from the policy? Nothing at all. What's growing is the asset base, the hybrids. They're growing at double-digit growth the last 10 years. We're seeing that the cost of an asset-based long-term care policy in many cases is very close, if not the same cost, as a traditional long-term care policy, but can address all those concerns that people have. They don't have to worry about the use it or lose it, because if they never use it, there's a death benefit. If they decide to cancel the policy, there's cash surrender value. There's enough long-term care benefits by accelerating the life insurance benefit, so we have the long-term care covered. Just a much better way to go. Sorry? Fraud doesn't go down. It's eliminated. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It goes down to zero. There's virtually no fraud. Why is there no fraud? It's your money. It's your death benefit. Why would you defraud yourself? There's no reason to. So fraud is virtually gone, which is great. Then we look at the hybrid annuity policies. Well, with the passing of the Pension Protection Act of 2006, that went into effect in 2010, you can take an annuity with gain that's a non-qualified annuity, do a 1035. Now when you take money out of that annuity, that all of those dollars coming out, including gain, come out tax-free. Think about this. If you just said to your clients, ask them this question. If I could show you a way to take care of long-term care with your annuities tax-free, would that be of interest to you? Who doesn't like to take money out of an annuity tax-free? If they're outside of surrender and they're not planning on using it for income, it's a beautiful play to use an annuity to pay for a future cost of long-term care. So we see a lot of that happening today. Yes, sir. So they're a tax-qualified long-term care annuity. Tax-qualified long-term care annuity. Sorry? No, not the tax-qualified from a long-term care. Gosh. See if I move it over here. Tax-qualified from a long-term care standpoint. So when you receive the benefits for long-term care, they're not taxable. Yeah, and they're not taxable for long-term care. So they're excluded from any tax liability. That's what makes them tax-qualified. Okay? Yep. So the company I work for, State Life, One America, we can use qualified monies in a long-term care contract, in a life insurance policy. And it doesn't eliminate the tax liability to a client. What we do is we're able to spread the tax liability out over a period of 20 years. So we take small distributions every year for 20 years. So you still have to pay on the distribution, and it does count toward being an RMD. It will qualify as an RMD. The beauty of it is it's not just moving, for example, $100,000 today and saying you have to pay taxes on $100,000. We're going to spread that liability out over 20 years. So that's another unique way, and that's something that One America offers. We have a patent on that benefit and that product. Joint life as well. Right. Can't do a child, not on the IRA. We can do joint life in general, but on the IRA, it has to be a spouse. So that's the other thing, is we can include two people. Even though the money's in my name, I can include my wife in that policy. Yes. I said yes, probably a little too soon. It depends on where in the policy year. So because we're taking the money out over 20 years, if it's after the 20th year, 100% is coming out tax-free. If it's in the 10th year, part of it's still coming out of the IRA annuity, because that's where we're putting the money to fund the premium. So there would be a small tax liability as well. So it just depends on at what point. But keep in mind, most people that buy long-term care policies, whether it's a traditional or an asset-based or an annuity type of long-term care policy, we don't buy long-term care protection today because we're going to use it tomorrow. This is a purchase that we're making today that in most cases is going to be 15, 20, 25, 30 years out before you'll actually see a claim on their policy, which is why we seek fraud, because they paid premium on traditional policies for so long, they want something out of their policy. And there's a very long tail, and that's why you also have to make sure that the companies you're working with have great financial ratings, because this is not something that you buy today that you're filing a claim on tomorrow, like your health insurance or dental insurance. There's a very long tail before you're going to see a claim on these policies. Okay. So many post-retirees have one of the following. They plan to leave their money to their kids, their grandkids, their charities. But if they have that unexpected long-term care event, that well-thought-out plan could be gone. That's why long-term care planning is so important, because we think we're going to be able to leave these dollars to our kids, our charity, and then we find out the hard way when we start spending $75,000, $80,000, maybe $100,000 a year for long-term care that it's gone in virtually no time. So I'm a couple minutes early before the break, but I also started right on time. Any other questions I can answer for anyone? Yeah. It's what's protected first, but they can. It's what's protected first when you look at the total value of the home. They can go after other dollars if it exceeds that. $400,000, you're okay. Until they pass away. And then they can go after it. Right. Nope. There was a stamp going around. Yeah. Thanks, everyone, for coming today. I appreciate it.